Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are still in Season 3, the 17th episode, the 43rd episode overall, Cold Comfort.
Appropriate today.
Why is that?
I don't know. How cold is it outside? Like 10 degrees or something?
Unless you live in, like, below the equator or in Florida or Southern California, you are, like us, probably in a deep Arctic freeze.
Yep.
In the rest of the continental United States. In New York City, it's like 10 degrees outside today as we're recording this.
Yep.
The cold whipping us in the face, which gives you a preview of what it must be like to be attacked by Iceman, the famous X-Men, X-Man Bobby Drake, wouldn't you say?
I would say.
He'd be insanely dangerous to face off with in real life, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a few, you know, spoilers, this episode's all about Iceman. A great episode, I must say. I really enjoyed rewatching
this. Yeah, me too.
But there's just, like, a few scenes in this episode where he shoots some ice at some fellow X-Men, and, you know, he's using his ice powers against some other people. And it's like, walking around in 10-degree weather just for 10 minutes, that's got to be painful as hell.
Yeah.
The pain of cold is real, is it not?
Completely.
Freezing to death is very painful. And his power is just, like, shooting you with, like, liquefied ice that it instantly hardens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it must be scary.
Yeah.
All right, but that's just a side note. Just letting people know for posterity's sake how cold it is today. This episode, like I said, I really enjoyed it. This had everything I ever wanted as a kid, first of all.
Uh-huh.
I think, like, there must have been some promos for this, you know, back in the day. And I was so excited to watch this episode. Iceman was one of my favorite characters. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of, like, the best kid-friendly X-Men characters there ever was.
Is this the first episode we're seeing him in?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love his power.
Yeah.
That, like, the way he uses it to make those ice bridges. Like, the first time you see him do it, I remember my mind just being blown. Like,
yeah.
How could he even think to do that? That's so cool.
It rivals Spider-Man for, like, best superpowers to get around a city with, to create an ice bridge that presumably he can, like, shoot way, like, hundreds of feet into the sky.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to have, like, he's not, like, really limited to the ground necessarily.
No.
It seems like he can just blast off.
Even when he's, like, falling from a great height, he just, like, shoots some ice down.
Yeah.
And, like, makes an awesome, like,
swirly ice slide.
It's so cool.
Yeah, and it's actually not... It actually makes sense that they teamed Iceman up with Spider-Man in that silly 80s cartoon, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Oh, yeah.
And also Firestar was the third member. We're going to talk about that show one day, too, I promise.
Okay.
But Iceman, just a great, fantastical character come to life. And, like, never really done justice on the big screen. I think the actor who played him was Sean Ashmore, maybe? Is that his name?
I don't even know or care.
He's fine, but he's just a bit bland.
No, I mean, he was good, but, like, they couldn't...
It wasn't the same character. It was just totally remade.
Yeah, like, his personality was different, but also, like, I don't know how they would do that. Like, those most awesome aspects of his, like, mutant powers weren't brought to life on the big screen.
No,
the ice slide and bridges and stuff like that. I don't know how they would have done that.
They kept teasing it in subsequent movies. Like, for instance, in X-Men 1, like, they just show him, you know, make some ice with his hands.
Yeah, right.
In X-Men 2, they show him, like, do some more stuff with ice, you know, like, blast some people with ice maybe or make it cold. But they don't show him ice up. In X-Men 3, he finally ices up, but it's in a horrible movie, and it's for, like, 2 seconds, and it's not satisfying at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, the other thing I didn't like, I think they've done this in all the X-Men movies when they've shown him, like, every time he ices up, he's not, like, in his naked self, as he should be. He's wearing his leather jacket and outfit.
Yeah.
So he kind of, like, ices that over.
Yeah.
Or he's, like, iced up underneath his clothes. Which I thought is lame. That is not how I want to see Iceman. I want to see, like, the man made of ice.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Again, I don't really know how they would do that in, like, a family-friendly movie.
Why not?
I don't know.
I mean, they did the Silver Surfer in a movie. He's just essentially a silvery naked man.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's fine. You just, you know,
just
like...
be CGI.
The way they do it... Yeah, exactly. It'd be CGI. It'd have to be good CGI, because it's hard, right? It's, like, hard to animate a whole person as a crystally sparkly person.
Well, they did it with Emma Frost too, though.
Yeah, but, you know, how good does that really look?
Yeah,
it's like, it's just difficult. It's like, it's some CGI that's going to take a bit more money and a bit more.
I mean, they have money.
Well, now they will with Disney. Well, Fox has been notoriously cheap. I think that's why we haven't gotten the Iceman that we need, that the world needs. but I, you know, with Disney buying the properties, I think we're going to see Iceman again, and I think he's going to be awesome. That's my prediction.
That'd be cool.
Number one for the Disney Fox merger.
Okay,
is we're going to get some sweet, sweet, properly done Iceman.
We'll see.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, like I said, he's never really been done justice in many ways. You know, I'm sure there are a zillions of Iceman comics out there. In the original run of the continuity, he was kind of like pushed to the side at first. You know, he was in the original X-Men team, obviously, from the 60s. Mm-hmm. Then he kind of leaves the team after the giant-sized X-Men form in the 70s with Wolverine and Storm and Nightcrawler. And then, you know, he's like there, like, as a background character. And then he's kind of brought back in X-Factor. And that's a whole nother X-Factor than the one we're going to be talking about today, the original X-Factor.
Yeah.
Then he's like, I think he returns to the original X-Men. I think he's on the gold team. I think I could be mistaken. And then beyond there, I have no idea what happens to him. It's not like there's been that many memorable Iceman comics, so the fans are probably going to yell at me about that statement. But he's not, like, iconic in the way that they've done with Wolverine, for instance, or mm-hmm. even Cyclops or, you know, Beast even. So he's kind of like just like a lesser main X-Man.
Well, he's not a core member of the X-Men at this point, so...
What, you mean the cartoon?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, in the cartoon he's not even in the show.
Right, yeah.
So, and I want to say, like, talking about Iceman in the comics, they did, like, do something very, like, you know, headlines-making. Occasionally you'll see, like, a headline from a comic book. You know, Superman's been killed. Uh-huh. You read about it in, like, the New York Post or something.
Yeah.
Like, the one they do with Iceman is... They had this whole, like, and I actually think this is a really cool premise and a really, actually, I started reading these comics, but I haven't followed through on them. But they took the original team from the 60s, mm-hmm. although in the adjusted Marvel continuity timeline, it's not really the 60s anymore, it's like the past.
Yeah.
Right? So, but they get brought back to, they get brought to the present, where they meet the current X-Men, who are all adults, mm-hmm. and the current X-Men are all, like, fucked up and insane, like, Cyclops is a bad guy or something, and Wolverine is doing things, and, like, there's all, like, a mutant civil war, and, like, things are, like, way more complex and heavy.
Yeah.
But the original team, they're all, like, gee-golly, like...
Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Yeah, like a classic Marvel heroes, yeah. Right? So they bring them to the future... And they have to adjust to the future, and they have to, you know, deal with their adult selves, too. It's kind of funny. There's like, it's actually a really awesome premise. And what happens is Iceman, who is established as, like, a heterosexual man with many relationships over the years in the comics, the traditional comics,
yeah.
The young teenage Iceman, when he's brought to the future, he realizes he's gay.
Oh.
And so that's, like, kind of, like, a neat twist for the character. Huh. And and I think I've read this, that, like... when the teenage Iceman says he's gay, the adult Iceman also, like, realizes he's gay, too.
Oh, wow.
At some point, yeah. So they just made the character fully gay.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, like, that's been, like, a major twist in Iceman news. So, you know, Iceman, like, a really just a great imaginative character dreamed up by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby in the 60s. You know, just, and, you know, I just want to keep talking about Iceman. I love him. You know, originally when he appears in the 1960s, he's basically Snowman, which was kind of funny that they called him Iceman, but they drew him like he's a snowman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the way he looked was he looked like a pile of snowflakes. You know, like, he would generate the ice on himself, but it would be snow-looking. And he'd shoot snowballs at people and make, like, snow barriers.
Not like he looked like a snowman.
Yeah, he wasn't, like, fat like a snowman. He wasn't, like, in three round globes. He was just covered in snow.
Got it, okay.
And he wore, like, you know, like, old-timey, like, winter boots. Uh-huh. And that was pretty much it, you know?
Yeah.
And he was a real goofball. He was the youngest member of the X-Men, like, 15 years old or maybe 16. And he was still, like, the immature kid.
Right.
But then, like, quickly, like, 10 issues into the original X-Men run, Professor X gives him, like, a belt or something, like a magic belt, and he's able to, like, solidify his snow into ice, and then he properly becomes Iceman.
Oh.
And I just thought that was weird. Like, why... It's like they named him Iceman. Why did he start off as Snowman? And then, like, why... It's funny that they did such a quick course correction to make him more icy looking.
It's funny that they had, like, the gimmick of the belt, because...
Right, yeah.
I feel like people would have just accepted it if his powers like changed a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just been like, well, he's growing up. His mutation is growing with him, or something.
I'm like 90% sure in the belt gimmick. First of all, like, I'm pretty sure it was like he got a magic belt that Professor X gives him something. But like, I think they explain it like that he hasn't fully mastered his powers yet.
Uh-huh.
Or that it's also a combination that he hasn't fully mastered his powers, but also that he. His powers are actually extremely dangerous, and like I think he's like one of these like highest level mutants secretly.
Oh.
That like he's got insanely ridiculous powers when you break it down. Hmm. And like there's been some other interesting plot lines with him and his powers where I think there's a point where he like turns into Iceman and he can't turn back to human. He's like permanently in ice for a long time.
Hmm.
And so, you know, there's also like, weird stuff happening with him. And then his look changes too. He gets like even more icy in appearance, like his hair gets all spiked and stuff, but I don't know if that's a design choice or like what.
Oh.
But like there's a lot of weird stuff going on with Iceman and his powers. But anyway,
all right.
Starts off as Snowman, then does become Iceman. And that, you know, let's leave it there for the comic book Iceman. We got a nice flavor of him.
Yeah.
He's also always eating ice cream and stuff in the comic. all right. So, but in this X-Men cartoon, it's nice that they did a great Iceman cameo episode.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're going to see him again. But it's just, it needed to happen, and it's great that the writers realized that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just too perfect for cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great, there's so much fun stuff you can do with Iceman. It makes you wonder. It's like, it makes you wonder how much, like, how he missed that original cut there, you know? You know what I mean? Like, they were talking to us about, the writers of the show were saying that, you know, Marvel insisted they have Gambit because he was, like, a hot new character at the time. So maybe it's, like, when you're forced to take on Gambit, who we love.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have a traditional guy like Iceman. You know, he misses the cut.
There's just so many.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, but that's the thing. That's what I'm saying about Iceman. He's always, like, shortchanged a little bit in the X-Men universe.
Including in this storyline.
Right, yeah, so, yeah. It's all about how Bobby Drake, as he's known, is a little bit, you know, spit upon.
Yeah.
So to speak. So this episode opens. We see Iceman. He's breaking into the what's known as the Kirby Glen storage facility or something. It's like some kind of military base. And Kirby Glen. Kirby, a clear, you know, tribute to Jack Kirby.
Yeah. Who, Glenn, we don't know so much.
Glenn, yeah. He might be a tribute to someone, too. I don't know. Yeah. Right. Someone let us know. Yeah, but Jack Kirby. I'm sure Jack Kirby invented Iceman. I'm sure. You know, we've talked about before, but the Marvel method, this is how they created comics. So Jack Kirby, or whoever the artist was, Steve Ditko, they would draw a bunch of characters, make a comic book with no dialogue, maybe like a rough outline, and then Stan Lee would fill in all the dialogue and bubble and like name everybody. And then, according to Stan Lee, Jack Kirby would never read the comics after he gave him Stan Lee, you know?
Yeah.
After, you know, Jack Kirby would work from his like basement in Long Island somewhere, just drawing comics endlessly.
Yeah.
And, like, that, like, he was an insane workaholic, but he never, like, rarely went into the Marvel offices where Stan Lee worked. And, because, first of all, he kind of hated Stan Lee. Stan Lee was, like, 20 years younger than him and, like a real goofball himself. And
uh-huh.
He was, like, Stan Lee was, like, the nephew of the owner of the company or something, of Martin Goodman, who owned Marvel Comics. Goodman, maybe, I think his name was. And, so they didn't get along at all, really. But, so, the point is, like, Jack Kirby probably invented Iceman. He just drew like five teenage superheroes, and Stanley's like, "Oh, they're the X-Men, and this one's Iceman," you know.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, a nice tribute to Jack Kirby to always remember Jack, who also shortchanged in life as well. You know, he died before he could see. He died in I think 1994, before like right at the time when Marvel, you know, was about to enter some serious like financial straits and skids. You know, there never was any good successful Marvel movie up to that point. He's already screwed out of the royalties from Marvel. You know, his wife waged like a big lawsuit against the company. I don't know how that was resolved. I don't think it went too favorably for him. I think he got some credit in the end. They gave him like something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe his family gets a royalty now, like a nominal one. But I mean, his ideas have basically grossed like $10 trillion. You know, like between all those Marvel movies, the Avengers, you know,
yeah.
The X-Men. I mean, he invented most to them, like 90%, you know.
Right.
And you know, and Stan, we've had this argument before where it's like, how much credit does Stan Lee deserve? Because he, in the general public sense, he gets most of the credit as being the mastermind, because he's, quote, the writer.
Yeah.
But really, like we said, with the Marvel method, it's like, who's writing what? You know,
right.
Jack Kirby's drawing the whole freaking thing from like his imagination, and Stan Lee only gets it after the fact. and is kind of like filling in the rest.
Right.
And then there's some debate like, oh, does Stan Lee provide the outline at first and then Jack Kirby draws from the outline? You know, it's like kind of no one really knows like who did what. But the point is, like, Jack Kirby...
So Stan Lee is secretive about it? Is that what?
No, he's been... Stan Lee's been... I think Stan Lee gets unfair rap. He's been really open about giving Jack Kirby praise.
Uh-huh.
Really open about, like, saying, like, you know, Jack did a lot of the heavy lifting. But at the same time, he's defended himself saying, like, listen, I did write these things.
Yeah.
You know, I did come up with a lot of the details and I kept, like, a lot of the... like the continuity going, and you know, I set up the whole universe. I mean, like, and I kind of agree, Stan. I think he does deserve a like let's say maybe it's not fair 50-50, maybe it's like 60-40, like Jack to Stan, you know, but we have to give Stan a significant amount of credit, you know. Like, I think it's not fair to just to have like this popular hipster opinion that Stan Lee is a jackass who did nothing,
mm-hmm.
and that it was all Jack Kirby's imagination.
Hmm.
I think Stan deserves a lot of credit, you know. I've read extensively about this, so
I can tell.
Yeah. And if you want to, like, folks, if you're interested in this, you can Google, like, it's actually kind of painful to hear, but some, like, radio guy in the late 80s or maybe early 90s got Jack Kirby on for, like, the most extensive on-air interview you're ever going to hear him on. And you can Google, like, Jack Kirby, like, Stan Lee radio interview.
Yeah.
And in the middle of this long interview where Jack Kirby's being very, like, open and, like, kind of, like, vulnerable about how he got screwed out of the comics business, Stan Lee calls in.
Whoa.
Yeah, and, like, confronts Jack on the air about, like, who did what. And it's so dramatic and it's so, like, it's, like, very cringeworthy and sad.
Aww.
Because they're, like, this radio host, like, thinks it's no big deal, like, because he's kind of naive about it in general. Like, in the 80s and 90s, no one knew what the fuck was going on, like, or cared, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was not, like, the stakes were not as high of, like, who created what, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's like, Marvel
was
not...
nobody was making money on it.
Yeah,
time,
like,
so
yeah,
it was like, whatever.
Like, yeah, the only people making money on it were just, like, the Marvel publishing company that was, like, not doing that great. It was, a also-ran company that by that point, sort of.
Yeah.
So... But it was, like, a really emotionally charged, intense thing when Stan Lee interjects into this interview and, like, tries to, like, get Jack to level with the audience, saying, listen, like, you've been saying all this bad stuff about me, but be honest, like, I did a lot of the work, too, you know? Like, and Jack, like, didn't want to give him credit, but, like, Stan Lee said something very cutting, which I believe is true in the interview. He said, you know, Jack, you never even read the issues after I wrote them, so how would you remember, like, what I did or didn't do? And I think that, like, the impression you get is that Jack Kirby probably didn't read the final issues after they were done. He probably just drew them in his basement and, you know, went on to the next one.
Yeah.
Because he was working like a maniac and, you know, and he was doing it like he was getting paid by the page, so he was too busy and he had to support his family to care. Like, he wasn't concerned about, like, you know, who was doing what after he finished drawing it.
Mm.
So everyone should seek out that interview. It's like super crazy and intense. And here I am going off on a lot of tangents in this episode. This episode really excited me. I'm going to have a few more tangents down the road. So Sonia, bear with me.
Okay.
All right. Back to the cartoon here. So basically, the Iceman appears early 2 seconds in. And your first reaction was what when you saw him?
I don't know what.
You don't remember what you told me when we were watching it 20 minutes ago?
No.
I've really scattered your brain here. You're like, oh, it's Silver Surfer.
Because I was like standing up like, what was I? I don't know. I wasn't like watching yet because the episode had just come on. And uh-huh. I just like caught a glimpse out of the corner of my eye.
Shoveling apple pie down your face.
Yeah, I just like caught a glimpse of him and I was like, oh, Silver Surfer. And then I like saw the ice bridge. I was like, oh, wait, no.
Well, to be fair, you've been reading a lot of Silver Surfer comics,
that's
haven't
true.
You? Yeah, we got like this 5-volume set, but I've told on the last episode, but Slott and Allred, I don't know their first names yet, and I don't know who writes and who draws, but they're the most amazing like Marvel comics we've read in a long time.
Yeah, it's really entertaining.
Yeah, they're super amazing. Check them out.
Anyway, it is not Silver Surfer
no.
in this episode.
It's Iceman.
It's Iceman.
All right. So he's breaking into this facility. We don't know why. Back at the X-Mansion, Jubilee and Professor X are fighting. Jubilee really wants to fly the mini jet. Like, that's like a theme that we've actually seen in a few episodes.
Yeah.
That thing she loves most about being an X-Man is hopping in those sweet yellow mini jets and giving them a whirl.
That's fair.
What do you mean that's fair?
I'd be excited about that too.
Yeah,
if I
guess. Right. Yeah, no, but we saw her in the one episode with Colossus when he returns.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, it's.
She's not very good at it.
No, she's not good at it, but it's a whole, like, thing for her because she's never allowed to. You know, it's like a teenager taking the car out for a spin or whatever, and like, the parent here but is she, Professor X being like, you're not old enough, you're not responsible, blah, blah, blah.
I feel like
she doesn't like being treated like a kid, and this is, like, a very symbolic for her of being treated like a kid over and over again. So
I side with Professor X 100% in this argument he's having with Jubilee.
Yeah.
For one reason. When Jubilee flew the X-Jet the last time, I believe Professor X was lost in the Savage Land with Magneto.
Yeah.
When he came back and must have heard that she's been flying the X-Jet around, like, flew to Russia from, you know, Westchester, New York.
Yeah.
He must have been horrified. Like, the, you know, that is a, like, borderline. He could be arrested for allowing a teenager to access one of his private jets and just fly it around.
For the record, he didn't allow her.
Airspace.
She just did it.
I know, but I mean, my point is, like, she got away with it. Like, he got away with it, apparently. But it's one of those things where if it was my, like, teenage ward, I would be completely, like, you know, like, almost, like, borderline throwing up that she managed to hijack one of my personal aircraft without proper training and flew into international airspace.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so he's rightfully not letting her touch those X-Jets. But they get a report on Cerebro saying that there's a mutant violent attack somewhere. And Professor X talks to Cerebro. It's kind of funny. He's like, Cerebro, describe the mutant powers being used instead of asking, like, who is it?
Yeah.
Because Cerebro tells him who it is and, like, after that.
Right.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like, and then Cerebro's like, generation of ice and formation of ice crystals or something, you know? And Jubilee's is like, Storm's in Africa.
Yeah.
Because up to this point, Storm has pretty much shown that she's got Iceman's powers.
Right.
Which I find...
We never see her use an ice bridge, though.
No, she can't use an ice bridge, but she does make ice.
But she flies, and, so I guess she doesn't need to.
Right, and makes snow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but no, Jubilee, how ignorant of you. It is Iceman, Bobby Drake.
Yeah.
And, you know, Professor X is extremely alarmed. He's in a really pissy mood as it is for yelling at Jubilee for being a petulant teenager. And now that he sees his old X-Man Bobby Drake doing stuff, he's more in the, like, I hate teenagers mode than he would normally be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's all wound up about the subject.
Right.
And so is Cyclops.
For some reason.
Cyclops, like, immediately picks up, like, Professor X's ball and is outraged that Iceman even lives, it seems. He hates Bobby Drake with a passion, you know?
Right.
There must have been, like, in the history of the X-Men animated series that we never get to see, the prehistory, which we'll talk about more later, Iceman must have played so many pranks on Cyclops that he never got over it, you know?
Yeah.
He must have froze his underpants, you know?
Yeah, like, right.
Done a whole bunch of crazy stuff. So the X-Men are off with Wolverine to... What's so funny? You just, like, impressed how crazed I am about this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the X-Men are off with Wolverine to confront Iceman, to get him out of the situation. And Wolverine's a bit confused about how they should proceed because he's ready to, like, slice him up into ice cubes. And Professor X is like, no, we're not here to hurt him. And he's like, well, what are we here? Are we on his side?
Yeah.
He's like, no, we're not on his side. Of course not. That's ridiculous.
Right.
And
so Wolverine needs it to be very black and white. Like, either we're with him or we're against him. And Professor X is giving him this gray area that he's not comfortable with.
And then Wolverine decides to be kind of bemused by the whole situation in the end. I like Wolverine's attitude in this episode.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, he's more of an observer and thinks, like... I get the impression from him that he thinks the old X-Men business, they're pretty lame. You know.
Yeah. I mean, he's right.
yeah, he kind of is, yeah. And Cyclops is just, like, beyond outraged, like, that they're even going on this mission. And he's like, you're always making excuses for him. He's a renegade. He's just like, whoa. Like, pump the brakes there, Cyclops.
Yeah.
He's a dorky white guy like you with mutant powers.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, no need to, like, get all over him. And, so then they find Iceman at this base. They get into a fight with him. Oh, Beast is there, too, because he was also in original.
He also has some really winning lines in this episode.
Right, yeah. He calls Cyclops intransigent, I think.
Right. There's your SAT word.
Does he call him inobstinent? No,
intransigent.
Right, yeah. And Beast is way more sympathetic to Bobby. They were, like, friends, like, clearly. And, you know, like, OG friends.
Yeah. You know, I like this the footing that they're on, where they're all like contemporaries in this,
yeah,
like this cartoon Marvel universe, as opposed to like the movies where like Bobby and Rogue are like
teenagers,
a generation down, yeah, yeah, or like a half generation, right, down from the main X-Men team. Like, whatever, we've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. There's reasons why they did that.
But it's cooler,
I like
that
this better, yeah, where they're all like they have like a shared history, right, together. You
and,
know,
and I like that they're all adults.
Yeah,
and they're not playing down to like teenagers.
Right,
like, oh, it's the punked Iceman kid, teenager. You know what I mean? Like the whole show. Like I feel like if the show was made today, it would be like teenage like Jubilee, teenage Iceman, teenage Beast, teenage like Nightcrawler. They'd all be in high school. I mean, they did that with the next X-Men cartoon that they did.
Yeah.
I forget what it was called. Everyone hates me for not like caring or remembering that show. But like, yeah, I mean, I don't go for that. I like adults. You know, as a kid, I liked adult things.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be an adult, not like a dumb teenager as a kid.
I don't know.
I mean, you want to be a teenager, but like you don't like want to like grow up. You don't want to dream to be a teenager, right?
I don't know.
You want to, like I've said before, like you want to be Indiana Jones, not Indiana Jones's son.
Right.
Yeah, kind of thing.
I don't know. It's just like more, I think it's like a better storytelling device when they're all adults, because everyone really has like their own strong free will, and like,
right,
they don't have to waste time like rebelling against their parents and stuff.
Although that's like a big theme of this episode.
Right. Yeah. 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 That's true. But it's like,
but Beast ascribes that to, he says, and when it comes to the fights between Professor X and Iceman, he says, it's a surrogate father-son dynamic with unresolved issues of dominance.
Right. Yeah, okay, so it is a theme, but still, I think it's, like, more interesting when the characters are adults, because it's, like, they should have their own free will, and it's more, like, high stakes, like anything could happen, sort of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm with you. I'm more of like, I like my superheroes as adults, not as like bratty teens.
Yeah.
Field of entertainment. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they find Iceman. They get into a fight with him. Iceman like blows off Wolverine and Beast at first pretty easily, but then Cyclops sees him and blasts the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Like you could tell it's pretty violent. He's unconscious, mm-hmm, and Wolverine has like maybe the best line he ever says in the show. And the best acted line by Cal Dodd. he does like a double take. He looks at Cyclops and looks at Iceman. He's like, a touch of overkill there, Squinty.
I really love Squinty as a nickname.
Yeah. Yeah, that needed to be brought back. I think it's the only time he calls him Squinty. Like, it's kind of fun. Wolverine needs more like bashing nicknames for Cyclops in the series. I don't think he has enough of them. He should be calling him One Eye more, or you know, like Boy Scout or whatever.
Yeah.
Like Squinty, the best one though. and then we actually get a rare mention by one X-Men character to another about them inexplicably wearing an X-Men uniform. Like no one has gotten on Cable up to this point for wearing like an X-Men badge,
uh-huh,
you know what I mean? Like when they meet him,
yeah,
like no one's like, "Why are you wearing an X-Men outfit?" You
right
know? I think there might be a few other instances of that where somebody's wearing an X, where it's like no one comments on it. Like,
yeah,
how do you get an X-Men uniform? But Cyclops says, "You have no right to wear that uniform."
Right.
So he's acknowledging that Iceman's wearing an X-Men uniform,
which is weird.
Yeah, why?
Because he's not with the X-Men anymore, so like,
right,
why is he still like running around in spandex?
Well, I mean, my theory is it's like, is he wearing spandex or is he wearing a uniform of unstable molecules that, you know, it's like a fancy Marvel Universe uniform,
so
that
you think
he needs to like regulate his powers and stuff.
Oh, got it, okay.
He also needs like, it's a good way of them like getting over the naked aspect. Like, why does he appear naked? It's because he's wearing a skin-tight bodysuit underneath.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's always sort of been the case with Iceman, that he actually does wear like a, like a onesie, you know, a,
yeah,
unitard underneath his, I'm not sure how accurate that is what I just said, but like, often he is wearing like an under uniform.
Okay,
and
but
he,
like,
yeah,
there's no reason that it needs to have like a big X on it.
Well, where's he gonna get another one of those, is the point, like.
The unitard store.
Well, we'll see. That's like, I don't think he'd be shopping at the unitard store, you know, like, based on like what he chose to do after he left the X-Men.
Okay.
And we'll get to that in a
Go
minute.
On.
But yeah, so I like that finally someone acknowledges someone else is wearing an X-Men uniform. And that'll come up even a bit later some more, although not as forcefully as it should in this episode. All right, you have no right to wear that uniform. And then Beast explains to Jubilee that they've got like a, Iceman has a messed up father-son thing with Professor X, because they're all yelling at each other as they kidnap Iceman and take him back to the X-Mansion. Well, it's not really, are they saving him? Because he's about to be arrested by the military. Or are they, like, imprisoning him? Because then Professor X puts him in a jail in the rec room.
Right.
And, oh, and then, so yeah, so Iceman's trapped, they trap him in this, like, Shi'ar, like, floating, like, prison.
Yeah, Beast explains that they just got that technology from, like, their contact with the Shi'ar.
Right, well, actually, I thought he was just going to say that the Shi'ar gave it to us in their last, you know, seeing with the Phoenix missions. Uh-huh. But no, he says he scavenged it from the Morlock tunnels where the Shi'ar ship was hiding.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. That's, like, a theme that they've picked up from the comics, that the X-Men get a lot of Shi'ar technology going forward.
Yeah.
Although, I think, like, in the comics, the Shi'ar just give it to Professor X, more or less.
One way or another, like, it makes a lot of sense, you know? That really explains a lot. Yeah, because the X-Men, like, you know, before you know that it comes from the Shi'ar, it's like they inexplicably have all this, like, fabulous holograms. Technology, which,
yeah.
I mean, well, Professor X is fabulously wealthy, so money buys a lot of stuff.
And he's a genius, yeah.
But still.
Beast is a genius. But, you know, it's like, actually, I think in the history of this show and the cartoon, they have some of that amazing technology before they get it from the Shi'ar. Like, we've seen the hard hologram Danger Room projections,
right.
Which make no sense. Like, in the comics, that they're explaining that it's Shi'ar technology that he gets that stuff.
Right.
So here, it's like they mix around with the timeline a little bit, but whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, Bobby is trapped in the cage. He's not telling Professor X anything about why he broke into the government facility. He's like, listen, I don't trust you. You're an asshole. You've always been an asshole to me. Like, get lost. And Professor X, like, does the nice ethical thing and doesn't read his mind, which he could instantly mind rape Iceman if he wanted to. But he says, I'll just leave you here in the prison then. Fine. Yeah. Goodbye. And but then Jubilee, they cut to, like, a shot of her face, and she's horrified that the X-Men are just imprisoning their, like, old ally in the rec room and just leaving him. Like, it's a dungeon.
Right.
And, you know, she decides to take action.
Right. There, like, timeline-wise, though, it's like she, in the beginning of the episode, she had, like, watched some footage of, like, the original X-Men or whatever, and, like, of Iceman when he was a teenager.
Right, yes.
And she's watching the video, and she's like, wow, he's really good-looking or something
Yeah, she's really attracted to him.
So she, like, develops a crush on him, which is part of the reason that she's horrified, maybe, but also, like, because she was watching, like, the teenage version of him,
she relates
it's, like,
to him.
Yeah, she, like, sympathizes with him, and, like...
She sees he was a goofball.
Right, and, like, the father-son dynamic between them versus, like, father-daughter relationship with Professor X.
Yeah.
So... Anyway, she's an Iceman sympathizer.
Right, and so speaking of which, that old footage we see is pretty interesting. We see the X-Men in their original uniforms.
Yeah.
We talked in the last episode that Phoenix, like, transformed into her Marvel Girl outfit.
Right.
But her original, which was, like, a green and yellow, like, mini dress.
Yeah.
But here, her original Marvel Girl outfit was the standard blue and yellow X-Men uniform with the mask over the head.
Yeah.
And we see her in that, and we see Cyclops, and we see Beast. I think we see, like, pre-Blue Beast. I didn't even notice, but I'm pretty sure he wasn't blue yet. It was, like, the classic Beast when he was, like, just a gorilla man.
Yep.
And we don't see Angel, which I thought we would in these flashbacks. I thought, like, there is an episode where we see Angel, like, in the past in continuity as a former X-Man.
Yeah.
I thought for sure it'd appear in this episode. It doesn't. So they don't, like, introduce that bit of, like, you know, like, plot loophole thing.
Okay.
But anyway, so we see the original X-Men. We see them, like, fighting Magneto, a younger Magneto, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We also see him fight, like, this, like, huge green giant man, too, at some point.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who that is, if that's a real character or not. It might just be a generic made-up villain, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we get some, like, sweet, like, pre-history X-Men flashbacks. And we get some, like weird Wolverine commentary about, like, how he wasn't part of that era, too.
Right.
Which, like, you know, if you're a kid and don't know much about the X-Men comics, you'd be kind of intrigued to, like, oh, this show's kind of interesting. It's, like, not, like, the beginning of the X-Men. It's just kind of in the middle of the story.
Yeah.
So that's all cool, you know. So anyway, yeah, Jubilee sees this. She sympathizes. She lets Iceman go. She also overhears... Well, no, before she lets Iceman go, she overhears... Iceman tells Beast what's going on.
Right.
So he explains why he quits the X-Men and what his motivation is. So do you remember that story? You want to share it?
No, go ahead.
All right. So basically, he has enough. He fights too much with Xavier, so he decides to quit. And he quits with, on one of the missions, Lorna Dane, who's also considered one of the original X-Men in this version. Although it's not entirely inaccurate. Like, she was one of the first added X-Men in the original 60s run, one of the newer mutants. Like, there's this period after the original Kirby-Stan Lee run where they got some new writers in there, and they introduced characters like Havoc and and Lorna Dane, who is Polaris, the green-haired, like, Magneto-esque mutant.
Right.
And so, you know, I think always in the comics, Havok and Polaris were an item. I don't think she dated Iceman ever. I could be wrong about that. But in this version, Iceman has a thing with Polaris, and he doesn't like that Lorna Dane's in danger. He thinks the X-Men are too dangerous.
Uh-huh.
So he decides to quit, and him and Lorna, I think they moved to Seattle or something. And he becomes a CPA, right?
Right.
And they become, like, real yuppies, you know? Like, you know, just roller skating by the beach and just having, like, a happy life. But Lorna decides that, like, she needs to use her mutant powers for good still. She needs to be a superhero. But then they get into a lot of fights about it. But then Lorna Dane mysteriously disappears. She's kidnapped.
Sorry. Lorna Dane, always, every time you say it, because you, like, say her whole name yeah. every time, it reminds me of Lorna Dune, which is, like,
what?
Some, like, type of cookie, I think. I don't know.
I'm talking about Lorna Dane, the bright green, fluffy-haired X-Man with awesome magnet powers.
Yes. Sorry. Go ahead.
Let's talk about Lorna Dane real quick. She's an awesome character. I've always loved Polaris. Great name for an X-Man.
Yeah.
Great look. I like that they give her the green lipstick here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, like, really intriguing that there'd be, like, a female Magneto. Also, we decided to give Gifted another chance.
Yeah.
Is it The Gifted or Gifted?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Now that you say it.
We, like, you know, I read some articles in my Google News feed. It knows that I'm an X-Men fan, so they're, like, popular. Here's some X-Men stories.
Yeah.
People were saying that, like, oh, the season of Gifted was really good, and it was rightfully brought back for season two.
Uh-huh.
I was like, really? You know, I kind of like the pilot, but not that much, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't. But then we started watching it last night, and it was really good. Like, yeah. Episode two is pretty thrilling, and the stakes are really high, and the show's violent and screwed up, and I liked it a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then Lorna Dane, Polaris, is, like, a major character in the show, and spoilers, she's in jail right away, and they give her a mutant collar, which is crazy.
Like a Sentinels style.
Yeah, but it doesn't explode her head when she uses her powers. It just, like, it, like, zaps her brain.
Yeah.
So she can use it a little bit, but then, like, you know, falls into a coma or something, you know, like, her nose bleeds, and she's all fucked up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, and there's a cool scene where she's in the shower. She's got dark black hair. And then as she's taking the shower, the hair dye runs out of her hair, and you see the green underneath.
Yeah.
And that
doesn't make sense to me. If she was really trying to disguise herself, she would use permanent hair dye that wouldn't wash out the shower. But
yeah, why does she have hair dye that just washes out in one?
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't make sense. But anyway, then you get to see her fabulous green hair.
Right, yeah. And yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And the show, you know, it's like, it's really cool because there's moments where it's like we're not the X-Men or we're not the Brotherhood of Mutants. It's like just saying those names makes you want to see the X-Men as a TV show. I've talked about it many times. And I think we will get a proper X-Men show with the Disney acquisition of Fox. They're going to do something with that streaming network they plan on building.
Right.
Where they're going to, like, say, here's an X-Men show. It's probably not going to be the main characters, but it'll probably be X-Men-y enough. You know, it'll be something good, I think. Or at least it'll be a cartoon. They're definitely going to do a cartoon again. And hopefully the cartoon is, like, if Disney people, Fox people, if you read anything on the internet, all people say is, like, either bring the X-Men the animated series back,
mm-hmm.
you know, season six, which I don't think is likely.
Yeah.
Or just give us, like, the X-Men animated series style again.
Yeah.
We need that. We don't need, like, dopey high school X-Men. We don't need, like, off-brand X-Men.
Right.
We need, like, the X-Men doing X-Men things, like, in their X-Men outfits, taking shit seriously, you know,
uh-huh.
like, getting into some deep, like, psychological shit. You know what I mean? Right? Do you agree with me? Like, that's what we need. That's what America needs right now. We don't need some, like tease of the X-Men.
Right.
So that's my biggest hope with this Disney-Fox, like, evil conglomeration here going mm-hmm. forward, that we'll get some proper X-Men stuff. Yeah. But, like, well, whatever. Gifted's cool, though. I changed my mind. I think it's, like, a really cool show. I'm excited to finish the rest of season one. And I'm happy there's only, like, 11 episodes thus far, too. Like, that. It's not too much. I can't be dealing with,
all
like,
be easier to binge.
Right, yeah. I can't be dealing with, like, 23-episode seasons and things.
Yeah.
All right. So that's Polaris. All right. Anyway. So that's the story of why Iceman left the X-Men. So he's trying to find Lorna because he thinks she's been kidnapped.
Right.
But in the meantime, but Jubilee Overall hears all this. She helps Iceman get free. Then they fly back secretly to the base to break into it. When Beast, Cyclops, Wolverine, and Professor X hear about this, Cyclops and Professor X are again outraged. You know, Cyclops thinks Bobby kidnapped Jubilee, which is like, man, Cyclops, your misreading of this guy's personality is just like so off.
Yeah.
You're like not, like, you are just not in a good state to make any kind of sound judgments here, are you? Right? Like, he's just like totally insane. All right, then what else happens? We've gone so off base that I've like lost the plates of my notes. I also want to talk about how, like, in the flashbacks between Iceman and Lorna, when they're like living their nice life in Seattle, where he's an accountant.
Yeah.
I think that's like a subtle, like, there's so much subtle layering on this show for a kid's show. You know, like the thing they get to do that because they look human enough. They can pass as human. They can just pretend to not be superheroes and get to live a normal life. Other mutants do not have that choice. And that's something they talked about in the Gifted show, too, is that certain ones of them can pass as human and others can't. Like, I think the Blink character. Is that her name in the show? Is she Blink? The green-eyed one that makes the... It has to be Blink.
She's Blink, but I don't think they call her that.
They call her by her real first name, but yeah. I think she's Blink.
Yeah.
But she's got, like, reptilian green creepy eyes.
Right.
And there's other mutants, too, in the prison that Lorna Dane's in, where they look completely, like, monstrously freaky.
Yeah.
And it's, like, their lives are way more fucked up than someone like Lorna Dane, who could just pass as, you know, the worst thing she has to do is dye her green hair black. Like, who cares?
Right.
You know, and it's, even if she left her hair green, who would even really question it?
Yeah.
She's a beautiful lady. People, oh, she's just, like, spunky, you know? Yeah. Like, so I think that's, like, a subtle little, like, embedded message here that it was easy for Iceman to give up on the mutant cause because he just can look like a human being whenever he wants and pretend that he doesn't have any problems. But Lorna's more, you know, she's more idealistic about it and she knows who she is, and that's why she got into arguments with him about it. So, but I like that messaging. Like, that's one of the great, like, touchstones of, like, the X-Men universe, that certain mutants can pass as human, mm-hmm. and others, like the Morlocks, cannot. And their plight is different. And that's why the X-Men are important.
Well, it's another example of, like, we've kind of talked about before how the mutants in this universe are, a metaphor for, like, prejudice and, like, racial divide and stuff like that, in the real world. So like, another example of that kind of theme.
Like, truly making the show a uniquely amazing children's show.
Yep.
I mean, the fact that they tackle things like racism and civil rights and bigotry,
mm-hmm.
and they wrap it up in the most amazing, like, glamorous Marvel X-Men package is just, like, a testament to why people still love the show and why it's so great, I think. Like, it's, like, it's truly, like, a kids' cartoon show that has a message that's not lame and stands the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it needs to be, I think it needs to be endlessly applauded for that alone. It really goes a long way in instilling values in their loyal viewers, mm-hmm. you know, like, that are really excellent, like, non-garbage values. Non-garbage people values. So, all right, cool. So, you know, Iceman with Jubilee's help reinvades this military base, and then they're attacked by X-Factor. Now, this is like the midstream X-Factor, the kind of X-Factor that would have been in the comics at the time that the show was made. The original X-Factor was the five original X-Men go off and form their own superhero team. So Cyclops, Beast, Angel, Iceman, and Jean Grey, the resurrected Jean Grey. And that's why she was resurrected, was for this X-Factor concept. They go off and form some team. It's like there's like a real complicated, like, stupid reason as to why they're like I think, like, the idea is that they're forming a mutant hunting club so that people think that they're against mutants,
mm-hmm.
but the reality is that once they're given a mission, they go and rescue the mutants and get them to safety.
Mm.
So it's all like a cover operation. I don't know how long that that premise sticks. I think they abandoned that at some point fairly quickly because it's dumb, you know, it's like overly complicated. And then X-Factor just merges into like this like mutant off-brand force, you know, mm-hmm. with a whole new lineup. And the lineup here we see are Havoc, Cyclops' brother, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. Forge, who seems to be the leader of them. I don't know if he was at the time in the comics. X-Factor roster's changed many times. I have no idea. I'm not the biggest X-Factor fan. Wolfsbane, who is this woman who can turn into like a wolf, I guess, kind of like Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Like a wolf woman, not like a wolf that like runs around.
A werewolf.
Yeah, werewolf. Right. Okay. Strong guy, a big strong guy, like comically carnival size strong. Polaris is in there, although but she comes in at the end. Quicksilver.
Mm-hmm. That's all of them, I think.
Is that all of them? Yeah, that might be all of them for now. So, and Forge we've seen before in the future within the Bishop episodes.
Yeah.
Here he is as a younger man, which explains why he's wearing an X-Man uniform.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they invade the space, the other X-Men, and then they get into a fight with X-Factor, which is really cool and actually was super exciting to see. It's like one thing to get Iceman.
Yeah.
It's another thing, whoa, now we're getting X-Factor too? Like, yes. Thank you. And right away, Cyclops gets into a fight with Havok.
They're both like blasting each other and yeah. like find out that their powers don't work on each other.
Right. And it's
interesting.
A callback to when we saw Banshee fight Black Tom and their powers don't work on each other.
Yeah.
There's some weird thing going on in the Marvel mutant world where if you are related, your powers do not work inexplicably on your relative.
Right.
It might just be with these two sets of characters. It might be random, or it's just like some trope that does exist for some reason. But that's something that's always gone back to the comics that Havok's does he have cosmic blasts? I forget. He's got like plasma blasts or something weird. And Cyclops' optic blasts, they just don't work on each other, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting to know is that they do not know their brothers.
Right.
I think Cyclops knows he has a brother, like a younger brother, Alex,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't know he's Havok.
Yeah.
Which goes against the movies. You know, the movies do their own messed up version of the Summers family, and definitely goes against the comics. Well, not. I don't remember. I've only maybe read the episode where we introduced to Havok once when I read my original binge of like all the X-Men from the 60s to the 90s
mm-hmm.
in a row. So I don't remember like if Cyclops knew who Havok was when they first meet
mm-hmm.
or if they always knew they were brothers or not. Either way,
I think like the continuity of this show, they just haven't really had time to go into it. They've been busy with other things.
Yeah,
you know?
But they definitely don't know each other.
No.
They haven't met. They don't know each other's names even. So, and then Cyclops has a line, nice uniform.
Yeah.
Which to me is like a small acknowledgement that he realizes that the guy's wearing like an X-Men type uniform.
Because mm-hmm.
it's like, that's another question. Like, why aren't the characters asking? It's like, why do you all have spandex that say X on them?
Yeah.
We're the X-Men. Who are you?
Right.
So Cyclops gives the smallest acknowledgement that like something is weird with the other team's uniforms, but not enough. That always stuck out to me as a kid, sticks out to me now. You know, how could people be wearing the same branding, you know, and not realize it?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. So they're fighting Multiple Man. We forgot about him.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
He attacks Wolverine. Yeah. That's,
yeah.
Yeah. Another goofball, interesting character
mm-hmm.
with, like, bizarre powers.
Yeah.
So Multiple Man's this guy. His real name is Jamie Madrox, I believe. He can create multiple copies of himself. Each copy is, like, once they're created is like their own individual
mm-hmm.
and even though I think they all act in concert and like act from the one hive mind of the main Multiple Man guy, they could also like go off and live a separate life if they wanted to
mm-hmm.
like Multiple Man, when he's done with his power, he calls the bodies back into himself
mm-hmm.
but like I think like one of the weird quirks of his power is that a copy can like decide to just, no, I don't want to go back. I want to live my own life.
Mm-hmm.
And he just lets them do it, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what's going on with him.
That's funny.
Yeah, he's really crazy what's going on with that guy.
Right. And you said James Franco just signed on to play him, right?
Yeah.
In like his own feature movie.
Which is, it's going to be like an R-rated, like, you know, Fox movie, which we don't know if that's actually going to happen now at the Disney merger.
Right.
That needs to happen, though. That,
yeah.
That would be ridiculous.
That'd be entertaining.
Yeah. An R-rated Multiple Man movie starring James Franco would be bonkers. I don't know if it'd be good. I'm not saying it's going to be good, but, like, I want to see it. It's a spectacle unto itself. It's weird that James Franco wants to get in on the Marvel Universe, you know,
yeah.
and, like, and then he, and of all characters, he picks Multiple Man.
Well, I don't know if he gets to choose, really.
I think he chose. Like, he said, he went to Fox, it's like, I want to play Multiple Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, he's the one that pitched it.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's, like, you know, an independent artist, A-lister with enough clout where he's like, I want to be in your movies. Like, I want to do Multiple Man. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Right.
You know, and he picked, like a random... Multiple Man's not a main featured hero here. He's, like, a...
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. I mean,
no,
Ant-Man got a movie,
yeah,
right?
Well, so. Ant-Man's a little more prominently featured than Multiple Man in the
Marvel
universe.
Okay, but you know what I'm saying.
Slightly,
like,
more, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying Multiple Man's, like, just, like, a real side character.
Yeah.
You know. I think they've probably done some offshoot comics with him, but not, you know, a lot. You know, he's just like always been on a team and just a mutant, you know, in the X-Men world to some level.
Okay, so, anyway, yeah, so we'll see if it happens.
Yeah. I mean, James Franco, like, he's a square-jawed, handsome, pretty boy. He could have been any number of people in the Marvel Universe, I think, if you were casting him. I mean, he could have been Cyclops. He's got a Cyclops face. Mm-hmm. He could have been Havoc, you know.
He could have been Magneto.
Magneto, really?
Yeah, young Magneto.
Maybe a young Magneto. Yeah. Yeah, not like a prime Magneto.
No.
No. But, like, there, yeah, there's... I mean, he could have been Gambit, even.
Oh, yeah. That would have been good.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, Gambit might have...
like, if he can do a Cajun accent.
Yeah, I'm sure he could. I'm sure he would try. All right, yeah. So, Multiple Man, let's hope that movie gets made just to see it. Everything's going to be weird now with Disney owning Fox because... it's like, are they going to allow Deadpool to carry on? I mean, they say they will, but are they going to allow him to keep chopping off heads and saying, motherfucker, you know, and things like that?
Right.
Are they going to allow, like, more violent Wolverine movies because Logan was such a smash?
Right.
I mean, they should.
I mean, I think they're going to because it's about money,
well,
right?
Deadpool, I think they're definitely going to...
Deadpool made tons of money.
Yeah.
So...
But what about Wolverine? Like, because Wolverine is such a major character that they're going to want to fold him into the MCU in, like, a big, bad way.
Yeah.
But they can't have him be, like, the Wolverine we saw in Logan where he's decapitating people and like cutting people's legs off and with blood gushing everywhere like a Quentin Tarantino movie. They can't do that in the main MCU movies, but will they allow in the solo Wolverine movies for him to be super violent and insane?
Are they still doing solo Wolverine movies?
Oh, they definitely will. Nothing's been announced, but like once they recast the actor because Hugh Jackman's done, there's no doubt they're gonna do...
Ugh.
Yeah, enough.
It's too much.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's the biggest problem with this. It's like, it's going to be way too... I mean, it already is too much, but, like, now that Disney controls it all, it's going to be, like, all way extra too much. Because the obligation to see him is going to be that much more intense because they're all going to be connected, all the movies.
Right.
You know, so you're going to... There's going to be this feeling amongst nerds that, like, oh, I can't miss... the reboot of Wolverine 2 because
it
ties into
like it doesn't really matter.
Multiple Man now. Yeah.
I mean, who cares, you know?
Right, yeah.
Well,
I know it doesn't matter now, right, yeah. It's all happening, it is what it is, but as much as I hate the corporatization of all this and the evil monopolization of it, I still can't help but be excited
for
X-Men. Yeah,
I know, you're into it.
Yeah, I mean, I really do like it. And I might get sick of it, you know, like very quickly. I might be like, oh, this fucking sucks. I was an idiot, but I don't know. I just have this feeling that Disney is going to do X-Men justice, and that's what I need to see in my life. I need it.
Yeah.
I have so little right now in terms of, like, entertainment that's pleasing. All right, anyway. So they tangle with each other, X-Factor and the X-Men. Professor X says you need to switch your fighting partner because they've adapted to you, and they do so, and the X-Men end up beating X-Factor in the end. And Forge says, oh, thanks for engaging in a friendly skirmish with us. And Wolverine's not too happy about it, but whatever. He says, I'll give you some pointers right here. Oh, yeah, Forge says,
I've
like...
I've got your pointers right here, and he, like, brings up his claws.
Yeah, which is really weird. And everyone just ignores him. It's like, wow. People just know to ignore Wolverine on instinct when he violently threatens people with his knives. So that's the story with X-Factor. Professor X is kind of, like, shocked that the government's formed a secret mutant group without his knowledge, because he says, I'm closely tied in with the government. How could they not tell me? What an outrage. So, it's kind of funny that he's, like, not so in the loop as he thinks he is. And then Lorna reveals herself in her X-Factor costume and explains to Iceman. She's like, listen, I just you had given up on the mutant cause. I needed to keep fighting. So I faked my disappearance instead of just breaking up with you like a normal person.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally insane. It's like if you just broke up with me, I wouldn't have broken into a dangerous government facility and gone rogue, you know, like a lunatic. So I thought that was a ridiculous, like, moment that she's like, well, instead of breaking up with you, I faked my own disappearance and made it seem like I was kidnapped or killed.
Right.
The woman you love, you know, and, you know, without, you know, considering that you are have insanely violent superpowers and you might come looking for me, you know, I just thought you'd be cool with it and let me go.
Right. Then she also reveals that she fell in love with Havoc when she joined X-Factor.
Right, yeah.
Which is another,
triple burn. Yeah. And
poor Iceman.
And Iceman has like a real snarky, like Chandler from Friends-esque quip about it, where she's like, "I'm sorry, Iceman," and he's like, "You'll get over it," you know, like kind of like being snarky and like flipping the script on her in some like dumb '90s way.
Yeah,
and that just made me think that like Iceman is like Chandler. from the night. His humor level is basically like a Chandler. You know?
Well, that's the right time in history.
Yeah. No, I'm not against it. I just think it's funny.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, they fly Bobby back to the X-Mansion where they say their goodbyes. And, of course, they ask him to join the team, and he says no. And as a kid, you're left wondering, like, why not?
Like
he's demonstrated himself to be awesome. This character is great. We love Iceman. Let's get some more Iceman into our lives. And yet he decides to go his own merry way, you know, which makes sense in the grand scheme of things now as an adult. But as a kid, it was like much like when Colossus rejects the team and Nightcrawler and other. Well, Nightcrawler we haven't seen just quite yet, but soon.
Yay.
But it's really sad that Iceman does not join the X-Men TAS universe.
Yeah.
So that's all I have for this episode. I'm out of breath. And needless to say, I was quite excited to watch this one. I was thrilled watching it. It holds up, except the animation was a bit wonky. I think this is one of the ones exported to the external non-standard animation studio
that they use
for cheapness. It's got that weird, like, Cyclops' uniform is black instead of blue.
All the characters are a little, like...
dopier looking.
Yeah.
Their facial expressions are exaggerated in the wrong ways at times.
Right.
But still, it looks fine. It's not like what we're going to see in season 5 when it really goes off the rails. It looks good enough. And just a great episode. Maybe a top 5 episode for me.
Yeah.
It really holds up. There's so much dense layering. They get all the subtext right. There's a lot of subtlety they get correct. A lot of really good characterization. I mean, Cyclops is a little bit too insane in this episode, but
it fits with his personality, right? Though.
I mean, he just went through the Dark Phoenix tragedy, so he's a little on edge. Perhaps we'll give him a break. He's a renegade. It's like he's Iceman. Calm down here.
Yeah.
All right, so that's all I got for that episode. Let's do our plug section.
Do it.
I want people to follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. I want everyone to join the X-Men Task Facebook group. We've had a lot of new members join in the past week, which is really cool. Happy to see some new faces there.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes, whatever podcast app you use. That'll go a long way towards spreading the awareness of the show out there. And I just want people to also follow X-Men TAS on Twitter, at X-Men TAS. They are Eric and Julia Leewald, the writers of the show, and also they have the book previously on X-Men, which I encourage everyone to get. Sonia, do you have any last freezing words for our freezing friends out there in frozen land?
No, stay warm, everyone.
That's right. If you see Iceman down the street, run the other way. Good night, everybody.
Bye.